Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, February 2nd, 2013. This is episode 949. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is just $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy.
Here we go, Scott, on in 3, 2, 1.
Well, hey, hey, hey! Happy Saturday to you all. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek. Now, those of you who normally listen to the show might be expecting Leo Laporte about now. And normally you'd be right, but this weekend he has decided to take the weekend off and go to New Orleans for the Super Bowl. Wow. He and, what, 50, 90, 100,000 of his closest friends are going to be crammed into that that stadium watching the, what is it, the 49ers and the Ravens, I think. Even I can't get away from that. You know, I'm not a sports guy in any sense of the word, but even I know that it's the San Francisco 49ers, which is why Leo went. They won their playoff game, and so he said, oh, okay, they won. I'm going to the Super Bowl. Which is fine for him, and it's fine for me, because it means I get to sit right here in the fabulous TWiT studio and bring you an entire show of home theater goodness. Now, joining me today is my good friend David Vaughn, who is a product and movie reviewer for Home Theater Magazine and HomeTheater.com. David, welcome.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Good. Glad to be here again.
I'm sure glad to have you with me. Now, you also write movie reviews for
Home Theater Equipment.
Home Theater Equipment?
Yeah.
Okay. And certainly you're very familiar with a lot of product. You've been doing a lot of products lately.
Yes.
So I know you're going to have plenty of great answers for people who are going to call in for answers to their questions, which we're going to be doing for the next 3 hours. Now, I do have an announcement I'd like to make to start off with. As most of you know, I am the host of a podcast on Leo's TWiT network called Home Theater Geeks, which records on Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific, 5 to 6 Eastern. And you can tune into that live at live.twit.tv, and it's then posted as a podcast afterwards. And I've also recently been working as a senior editor on Secrets of Home Theater and High Fidelity at HomeTheaterHiFi.com, where mostly I answer listener and reader questions. So you can email me at any one of a number of addresses. I'll give you one here, Scott@TechGuyLabs.com. And I answer questions there on Secrets of Home Theater and High Fidelity. But this month, I just got a new gig, an additional gig, which is as the editor of AVS Forum at avsforum.com. Now, this site is, as its name implies, a forum for home theater enthusiasts to exchange ideas, ask questions of each other, and so on and so forth. And it's been around for something on the order of more than 10 years.
Maybe even longer than that. Maybe. I think it started in 96 or 97, very early in the internet.
Exactly. And I've been a member for over 10 years myself, and you have too, yep. I know. And but it was recently purchased. And the new owner decided that they wanted to expand the coverage. They're keeping the forum, of course. That's really the core of the site still. But they wanted to expand the coverage to include articles about home theater and so on. And so they really needed an editorial guy. And so I happened to be footloose and fancy free,
right.
And they happened to need somebody. And so we made an agreement. And so there I am now at avsforum.com. So I do hope you'll go check that out as well, because I'll be writing lots of stuff there. I'll be posting on the threads and writing other articles. I just posted a big article about media servers, dedicated media servers, as opposed to home theater PCs.
Right.
And these are typically kind of expensive products, but it was something that that they wanted to have on the site. So I said, sure, I can do that.
Like Kaleidoscope or...
Kaleidoscape.
Yeah, or Kaleidoscape.
Kaleidoscape is one, and Mosaics is the other, both of which let you import Blu-rays and DVDs and CDs onto a huge hard disk, and then you can stream them to different parts of your house or whatever. But there's a problem with that, of course, and that is the legal issue.
Right.
You know, because Blu-rays and DVDs are encrypted. They're copy protected. CDs are not. You can rip CDs all the time, no problem. But if you do that with a DVD or a Blu-ray, there's some legal question about that. It's basically illegal. And Kaleidoscape got in a lot of hot water over it. And they're still in the middle of a legal issue to deal with that. So... they're at the moment the case is pending. They're still selling their product. They decided to circumvent or address the legal issues by you can import a Blu-ray into their system, but you have to have the physical disc in a player,
right,
in their system, so that because the Blu-ray licensing, the copyright licensing says you can make as many copies as you want, but you can only play one copy at a time. That's all, you know, and so you have to have the disc, the physical disc in one of their players so that they can make sure that that disc can't get played at the same time as you're playing the one off the hard disk.
Right.
So it's a little bit convoluted. Mosaics did it a little differently. They said, we're going to sell you this system, but it's not going to have the ripping software. You have to deal with that yourself. And they even want their dealers to have customers sign a hold harmless document,
right,
that says it's your responsibility. If you want to break the law, they also point out that while it's illegal to make and sell or distribute software that can import or copy, break the encryption of Blu-rays and DVDs, it's not illegal to use such software.
Right.
So it's like, what's up with that? Man. So... anyway, that's all covered in this article that I posted about media servers. It's an interesting topic, this whole legal issue, you know.
Hollywood likes to treat their customers as everybody's a pirate.
Yes. This is Leo's point, certainly, that he makes many times, that they think that everybody's a pirate. And yes, that seems to be true, and it's really unfortunate. I'm getting some comments in the chat room that's saying it's illegal to back up DVD and Blu-ray movies? Well, yes, technically it is. So, you know, you just want to think about that. Now, there are plenty of people who are making the argument that, hey, we should be able to back up the content that we own. But it's the whole issue of, well, it's encrypted. It's copy protected. And those copy protection schemes have been broken long ago.
Yeah, well, they break them, and then they'll come out with the new version of BD Plus, and 24 hours later, that's broken.
That's broken. Yeah, exactly.
You'd think they figure it out. It's futile, and I mean, the music industry finally embraced digital.
Right, exactly. And the movie industry is trying to, with things like Ultraviolet, which you're making a face.
How to anger your customers even more.
Even more. Yes, exactly right. Ultraviolet doesn't really work that well.
No, it's horrible. You have to go to multiple websites, multiple usernames, multiple passwords. I still to this day cannot access any of my Warner Ultraviolet digital copies because they refuse to accept my password. I asked for a new password. I put that password in. It doesn't work either. And so finally, after, you know, 5 or 10 emails to customer service, I gave up. So I just don't use them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this is all very, very convoluted and controversial and unfortunate, because all we want to do is be able to watch the movies that we've bought and perhaps even watch them on different devices.
Right.
Right. That's the whole point of Ultraviolet, is it stores the content in the cloud, and then you can watch it on your big TV or your smartphone or your tablet or whatever. But they're making it very difficult.
Right. Well, and for the most part, the copy that you get is a down-res copy. So you buy a Blu-ray, and you're not going to watch the streamed version on your TV.
Right.
You know, because it's not going to look very good.
Well, you know what? We've got plenty more to talk about, and we will right after this. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
All right, on in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And that music, as all the bumper music today, or most of it anyway, will be from my wife, Joanna Kasdan, who people have been asking about her music ever since I started playing it as bumper music on the show. And I thought, well, today I'll share a little bit more. Most of it was recorded long ago and is only available in the analog domain on cassettes and LPs. What were those? I sort of remember those.
Hey, they're making a comeback.
They are making a comeback. It's right. Anyway, we are in the process of digitizing all of her material. She recorded 6 albums, 7 if you include one in the Catskills with Pete Seeger and a bunch of other people, which we're going to hear a little bit of later. And so I thought, you know, she's got such a beautiful voice and writes such great music that I thought, well, we'll have a little taste here and there. Anyway, we're going to get to the phones now and answer some questions. The number, of course, is 8888-ASK-LEO. Now, of course, today you're asking Scott and David, but it's still 8888-ASK-LEO, which is 888-827-5536. Okay, I am going to start with Ashar in St. John's, Canada. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome to the show. I thought I pushed the right button.
I got it.
Did I push the right button? Ashar, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. How can we help you?
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm pretty good. So my question was, I have a Panasonic 32-inch television. I'm not too geeky with television, so I thought I'd call you. But I'm looking for a budget setup, since I'm kind of on a budget.
You're not alone.
Yes. And I usually watch movies on a Roku. And I got it from America. I'm Canadian, so I mean, it works, but YouTube doesn't work on it.
One
of the things I watch is YouTube. But I was wondering if there was a good Blu-ray player out there that would satisfy my needs and, you know, get it for relatively of a cheap price, because it would broadcast YouTube and it would also give you best quality, at least on a 720p display.
Well, just about any Blu-ray player, pardon me.
Okay.
Just about any Blu-ray player will do the job. I generally, for the budget-minded, I generally recommend Panasonic Blu-ray players. They're typically in the $100 to $200 range U.S. And they all have streaming capabilities. YouTube, undoubtedly, Netflix, bunch of them. So, you know, that would be the way to go. David, you've reviewed some Blu-ray players lately.
Yeah, I reviewed Samsung's player. It's probably, I mean, if she's looking budget, you probably, I mean, how much are you willing to spend?
I've seen, when I go in stores, I've seen Panasonic ones ranging from about $50 to at least $100. And that's probably the most you can find. A Panasonic over here is probably $100.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you just, whether you need wireless or wired connection, Panasonic's are solids. I've been impressed with Sony's players. Mm-hmm. They've been solid as well.
Yep.
I mean, at least down here, Costco has a BX59 that was $79.99.
That was the Sony?
The Sony. Yeah. It was a branded player specifically for Costco, similar to their BX590 or BD590 that sold in regular stores. But it had all the streaming services. One thing I like about Sony over Panasonic is they have Amazon Video on Demand, which a lot of players don't offer. Sony is one of the few that does have Amazon Video on Demand. I don't even know if Amazon Video on Demand is available in Canada or not. But
Amazon Video on Demand isn't available, but I think I probably have a good one in mind. And I think I also was quickly wondering, I found one, and it's really good. I know people who have had them. But can you answer this really quick? But what would be a good audio setup? Because currently I'm using the internal speakers in the Panasonic, and the sound is a little bit muffled because it's mounted on the wall.
Oh, man. Yeah, yes. you've got probably the perfect storm of what not to do with sound. I would say on a budget, the best thing to do is to get a sound bar. These are becoming much more popular these days. It's basically a long, skinny speaker system that has typically it might have, pardon me, three channels, front, center, front, left, center, and right. Sometimes they simulate the sense of surround, and they do a more or less good job of that.
Especially if you have a rectangular or squarish room.
Correct.
With not a lot of openings.
Right, where the sound waves can reflect off the sidewalls.
Okay, and really quickly, do you think a Raspberry Pi would be a good home theater PC? Because I'm only going to use maybe light web browsing, maybe looking up some stuff on the internet, because sometimes family comes in my room if I want to show them something on the big screen. I know how to like go around Ubuntu and Linux, so I don't think that would be a problem.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any experience myself with the Raspberry Pi or really too much in home theater PC. Do you?
No.
You know, they're a little, you know, if you're comfortable with Linux and so on, it may be just perfectly fine. Anybody in the chat room can help us here. And by the way, I want to make sure everybody knows that going to the website for this show, which is techguylabs.com, should give you access to the chat room. You can also go to irc.twit.tv and join what is today Scott's brain. usually it's Leo's brain, but today it's Scott's brain. There are lots of people in there who have tons of great ideas. Already I'm seeing a Nightstar saying, Pi is okay, but liking better an Android stick. So there are now and NW says most content probably won't play on a Raspberry Pi. So there are now starting to be these streaming sticks that are little USB. They look like thumb drives. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you stick them into the USB port, and they basically give you streaming capabilities. Now, Roku has one, but it plugs into a port called the MHL, Mobile High Definition Link, which is very much like HDMI, but it's a slightly different connector, and it's certainly slightly different electrically. So you need to have an MHL port, which not a lot of products have yet. But there are others, and so that might be another way to go. I don't really have much experience with them, so if you can, log into the chat room, because I bet you that there'll be plenty of...
I already am in the chat room.
There you go. Okay, excellent. Well, keep watching, because there's tons of people in there who will know a lot about this and be able to help you with that. So thanks so much for giving us a call.
Scott, have you tried the... Oh, we're running out of time.
I'll take that question when we get back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
We're running scared. We were talking as June became July.
So that's my wife, Joanna Kasdan. This, by the way, is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. And that song, I'm happy to say, she wrote for me and for us.
How cute.
Mush. I know, it's super mushy. Hey, Valentine's Day is coming up. What can I say? So anyway, we were talking about sound bars a little earlier, and I wanted to kind of finish up that thought a bit, because it's a really important topic, because so many people don't want to have actual speakers around their room. Talking about wives and Valentine's Day, the wife acceptance factor of having a bunch of speakers around the room is not very high, shall we say. So a lot of people, plus you might not have room. So a lot of people opt for a sound bar. I definitely recommend you get something other than the internal sound of the TV, which is always crapola. And a sound bar is actually a pretty good alternative. We were talking about the Vizio as being a good option. The Yamaha makes a bunch of good sound bars. The YAS-101 is, I don't know, in the $100 range, you know, and it gives you a simulated surround. Now, it doesn't have super low bass. For that, you're going to need a sound bar with a subwoofer, a separate subwoofer, but a lot of them come with that. And you're going to spend $200-$300, something along those lines, to get a good sound bar. And that will definitely make a huge improvement over the TV's internal sound. So I definitely recommend that. Okay, let's get back to the phones. I'm talking now with Mark in Santa Margarita, California. You're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome.
Hi, Scott. Hi, David.
Hello.
I've been waiting so long to ask you this question. I finally got inspired and ripped my entire CD collection to my network-attached storage using DB Power Amp. And now I've got all that music there, and I don't know how to get it into other parts of my house where I'd like to listen to the music.
David?
I would look at the Logitech Squeeze Box as a good alternative. I mean, at least to stream it, you're going to need at the location source, you're going to need speakers, although Logitech does make a clock radio that will stream wirelessly.
And I do have a Squeeze Box, and that's kind of what got me motivated in this, is having that ability to get it remotely. So I'd like to get it to my existing receiver, eventually get it to speakers outdoors, and I'm just not quite sure what the next step is beyond the NAS.
Is the NAS, I assume the NAS is a DLNA compliant?
It is, yeah.
NAS.
It's Synology 1511.
Okay, for those who don't know that term, DLNA is Digital Living Network Alliance.
Yeah.
And it is a certification, a standard that lets devices share media files across a local area network. So the Squeeze Box is a good idea. There are now receivers that give you DLNA capability, so they would just be able to pull that data, those files, off of the NAS on the network wirelessly or wired. If the receiver isn't DLNA, what would be, other than a Squeeze Box, what would you recommend?
Boy, your only other choice is to use an AVR. Blu-ray players also will.
Blu-ray
do
players
it.
Often have it. Yeah, that's
I
true.
I mean, you need something to pull it from the server to get it to wherever you're going to. And then you also need amplification and speakers to get it there, too. So if you pull it into your main system, if your main system has a Zone 2, you can run speakers outside, run it off of Zone 2. I mean, this is where it gets really complicated to, you know, solve in a two-minute time period.
Exactly.
I understand. Is there a site that you would recommend that might have this information available that I could kind of digest at my own pace?
AVS Forums would probably be your best bet. You know, they have multiple topics on there, but if you screen down their main forum page, you'll find something as far as networking in a home and streaming and such.
Right, exactly. Another good one is audiostream.com, which is a sibling site to hometheater.com, where they talk all about streaming audio from online, but also around the home as well. So those are two good resources, I think, that you could take advantage of and would give you lots of good information.
And just one more quick related question is, if I do use the Blu-ray player to link that to my existing receiver, how do I access the content on the NAS?
It should be in the menu system of the Blu-ray player.
Yeah, you have to go into the like on a Samsung, you go into, I think it's called Home Network or Home Streaming or something like that. You go in there and then you click on music, and it searches for the music files and knows where they are.
By the way, AL in the chat room is saying you can use an Airport Express with Toslink to the receiver, and it doesn't need DLNA. I've never tried that, so if you have it already. If you have an Airport Express already, you might try that as well.
Great. This great gives me some direction. I really do appreciate it.
Sure,
sure. The next step in the process.
Great. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Okay, let's go to Ed in Long Beach, if I got the right button here. Ed, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, and David Vaughn. Welcome.
Good afternoon, guys. I heard earlier you were talking about the sound bars. That was kind of my question, and I was on with your screener at that moment in time. Are those things that go on like on top of the TV, or you mount them to the wall, or how do those work?
Good question. You can mount them anywhere. You want it to be close to the TV. You don't want it to be very far away. You can mount it either under the TV or directly over the TV. Doesn't really matter too much. Most of them come with a wall mount, so you could do it that way if you wanted to. They're typically very skinny, so they don't bulk out from the wall very much.
Got it. So they use an HDMI plug?
Typically, they can.
Right.
Or sometimes, right. Sometimes optical or coaxial, sometimes analog. If they have an HDMI cable, HDMI input, then they also have to have a audio codec built in. So they sort of are acting like a receiver in that case. So some right. of them have that, some of them don't. Some of them you would just plug an optical or a coax digital audio cable from the receiver to the soundbar.
And some need amplification.
And some, well, yes.
Some of them need external amplification.
Correct. So correct. In that case, you would connect the speaker outputs from the receiver to the soundbar. I don't think that's the case of the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
It'll be self-explanatory on the system that I'll just go searching out those things, and that's pretty much covers me.
Excellent. Thanks so much for calling. Really appreciate it. Let's see here. I saw something on the in the chat room about sound bars or something. Well, can't find it now. So let's go to another call. I think we got time. David in Venice Beach, line 5. You're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, and David Vaughn. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much. Good morning. I'm projecting my movies and DVDs and such on my PlayStation 3. From my projector, and now for the past couple weeks, I have a spot that's a little lighter on my screen when I watch a movie. It's like bluish, purplish in the center, and I'm not sure it's my light bulb being old. I can see that little faint taint of blue, and it's a little lighter. I wonder what that is, if you have an idea about that.
What is the make and model of the projector?
Sanyo, Z3.
A Z3,
yeah.
Which I think is an LCD projector. I don't remember.
I'm not a geek.
You're not a geek. I'm not a geek. I'm pretty sure it's an LCD projector.
Okay.
And how old is the bulb? Usually in most projectors, there's a timer that you can get into from the menu that shows you how many hours are on the bulb.
Oh, that's good to know, a timer.
Yeah, so there's probably something in there. We'll talk about that when we get back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're on.
The nature of fire is to burn.
And the nature of home theater geeks is to geek out about home theater. That's my wife, Joanna Kasdan, singing about Dharma, one of the fundamental principles of Eastern thought and philosophy. But here we are talking about Western thought and philosophy, that is, home theater. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Joining me in the studio is David Vaughn, another home theater geek. And we were talking with David in Venice Beach, California. David, are you back with us?
Yes, indeed. Thanks.
Here he is. Okay, so you've got the Sanyo Z3 projector, which we've determined is an LCD projector, 720p, quite old. It was made in 2004. And
in front of me now, huh?
Sorry? Oh, I'm not making... No. Please understand. I would never make fun of you. You know, I'm sitting here in front of a MacBook that's ancient, too, so I also use ancient stuff. Not a problem. However, as things get old, they tend to, you know, get problems, right? So one thing I asked you about was the age of the lamp. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that or not.
I didn't get a chance.
Okay, well, have you replaced the lamp ever?
I did once, about 2 years, maybe that's what it is, 2 years ago.
Okay, so probably not the lamp, but as I recall, you said the problem was that you were getting a sort of a lighter patch in the picture?
That's correct.
Okay. David, you mentioned something off the air that I think was pretty good.
Yeah, I think there's a chance one of your LCD panels is going out, or there's a problem with the electronics in there, and given the age... 9 years is really long for a projector. Especially it depends on how many hours you have on it. That would be one area I would at least research.
Now, did you say that this lighter area has a certain color, hue, or cast to it?
Yes, it would be bluish, maybe even light purple.
Okay, so that sounds to me like the green panel might be starting to fail.
What is the LCD panel? You say one might get out, so that means there's more panels. What are
Yes. In an LCD projector, there are three panels, and they're little, slightly larger than postage stamp sized panels, each of which have 1280 by 720 little tiny pixels in them, and light from a white lamp goes through a prism and gets split into red, green, and blue.
Okay.
And the red part of the white light goes through one of those panels and produces the red part of the image. The green part goes through another one and produces the green part of the image. The blue goes through the third one and produces the blue part of the image. And then those three images are recombined and shot out the lens to the screen. Now, if one of those and what you're saying is that it's looking kind of bluish or purplish, which means that area of the green LCD panel, the panel that's producing the green part of the image, may very well be failing and just shutting down. And so, in other words, all you're getting to that part of the image is more of the blue and the red. Because
how come it's so centered? It's pretty small. It's not huge. It's not the whole image, basically.
Who knows?
It could be a section of the panel is going
exactly,
bad.
Exactly. A section of that panel might be going bad. So I would say, if that's the case, it's time to simply buy a new projector.
Oh, they don't replace panels like that?
No. Well, it wouldn't be worth it.
Given the age of it, the cost of getting it fixed, you could probably get a new projector, or even better yet, you can get a used one, secondary market one, for a lot less money.
Oh, wow. Would you have an advice about one, an idea of a good one?
Well, my general advice about projectors is you can spend less than $3,000 on a projector, but I haven't yet found one. That's a new projector. I have not yet found one at significantly less than $3,000 that I thought looked very good.
Well, the Epsons, the street price on the Epsons
days... Like the 3020?
No, the 5020.
Even the 5020.
The 5020s, not the pro model, the consumer model, are less than $3,000
really?
On the street.
Okay.
I mean, you can look on the internet and find them.
And the Epsons are really fabulous projectors. I strongly recommend them. Not the extreme low-end Epsons, not the very bottom of the line Epsons, but the mid-line Epsons, the 3020, the 5020, the 6020, I think, is their top of the line. But the 3020 or the 5020 are fabulous, fabulous projectors, and street price under $3,000.
The 5020 you can get for $28.99. I'm looking at projectorcentral.com.
There you go.
You can get a Panasonic AE8000 for $27.99. I mean, those are pretty good.
And the Panasonic's also an excellent projector.
Yeah, and the 3020, $18.32.
Wow.
So less than $2,000.
There you go. And those would be excellent, excellent replacements. In fact, far better than the Sanyo you've got now because they're 1080p.
Better black levels.
Yep.
Nice. And last little thing. When I used to press select on my remote control, I would see the timer of the movie I'm watching, and now I don't see it anymore.
I don't know. Maybe again, there's a gremlin in the machine. I think it's time to replace your projector.
Right. All right.
Well, all right. Thank you for your time. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
We got a few minutes left. Let's go to Tom in Anaheim, California, apparently looking for a new TV. Tom, welcome to the show. Hello, Tom. Kyle, did I need to push the button?
I got it.
He's got it. Here he comes.
Hello.
There's Tom. How are you?
Can you hear me now?
I can. Welcome to the show.
Very good. Well, you were talking about ancient technology earlier.
Yeah, way back in 2004.
I have a 30-inch CRT TV.
That's pretty ancient.
And at some point in the future, I'm probably going to need to replace it with something.
Mm-hmm.
But I know how you like talking about darkening your room, but I'm going to take you out of your comfort zone because I want to talk about a brightly lit room.
Sure.
Okay?
You bet.
We're looking for something that will do very well for our exercise DVDs in our living room, and since we don't want to run into the furniture, you know, the lights.
You want to have the lights on. Okay, that's cool. So, totally cool.
So, with that, I start thinking about things as, am I going to have a lot of glare when I go shopping? Do I need to bring a flashlight so I can shine a light on the screen and check out the glare? And what are my, how wide of an angle can I get on these things as I'm moving around the room? So, you know, what are my options? What am I looking at doing? And what questions do I need to ask when I start going out shopping for this thing?
Well, okay, you've laid out the problem very, very well. And I will say that in that situation where you want to watch it commonly in a brightly lit room, that plasma probably isn't the best choice.
Is not the best choice.
Normally, okay. if you're a movie person and you really want to watch movies and you can control the ambient light, I generally recommend plasma over LCD.
Okay.
Or what's now called LED. And I will quickly point out that LED TVs are simply LCD TVs with an LED illumination system rather than the older fluorescent. Now, LED TVs are generally much brighter. So that's one good thing you want in a bright room. You want a brighter picture. And we're going to talk more about it as soon as we come back from this break. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this.
I hope you're enjoying Scott Wilkinson and the Tech Guy Show. Just a word from me a little bit about our phone system. Scott's not used it, so he can't talk as authoritatively as I can or as happily as I can about Ring Central. Man, do I love our cloud-based phone system from Ring Central. So the whole idea of Ring Central is you don't have a PBX in the basement. That's old school, man. You got to have the cloud. It is an amazing business phone system for small to medium businesses, and large businesses too. We were really puzzled when we moved in here. I thought, can I have people use their cell phones? No, can't do that. Russell, our IT guy, had used Ring Central before. He said, I think you should try it. We did, and we're so happy, and we're so happy to have him now as a sponsor. $20 per user per month. That includes long distance, includes faxing, and the free apps for your smartphone that allow you to make Ring Central calls from your smartphone. It looks like it's coming from the office phone. Your email or voicemail comes to your email. Faxes, too, and now they have a business SMS built in. Boy, this is just a great solution. I want you to try it. Visit ringcentral.com, and you can use our offer code TWIT or call. We have a special number for TWIT listeners, 800-543-9980. If you're trying to decide on a business phone system or you're not happy with your existing PBX, particularly the cost, save money, get more features for less, 800-543-9980, ringcentral.com. Now back to Scott Wilkinson on the Tech Guy.
All right, on in 3, 2, 1.
Well, hey there. Welcome. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, who is off in New Orleans for his Super Bowl adventure. He's been posting on Facebook from there, and we've seen pictures of him with powdered sugar on his nose from eating beignets. And I recommended that he go to the Preservation Hall, the famous traditional jazz venue there just off of Bourbon Street, where I heard some fabulous Dixieland last time I was there. Of course, I'm a Dixieland player myself, so I was a little biased, but I do hope he goes and checks it out because it really is quite a historic thing. I'm here with David Vaughn, my good friend and fellow home theater geek who writes for hometheater.com, equipment reviews and movie reviews. Thanks so much for being here.
No problem, Scott.
And we were talking last hour. We ended up with Tom in Anaheim, who was looking to replace his aging CRT TV with something that could be used in an exercise room. I don't know if we have Tom back, do we?
I'm here.
Here he is. Yay! Okay, so as I was saying
before I was so rudely interrupted,
you want to be looking at an what's called now an LED TV. Which is an LCD TV with LED backlight or LED illumination, because it's brighter, and that'll stand up to the high ambient light in your room that you want to be exercising in, so that you don't trip over the furniture. Now, the viewing angle, you asked about the viewing angle, and that is a bit of a problem on any and all LCD TVs. So, if you're going to be far off angle, and by that I mean, looking at a TV from directly dead on center, it looks great. But then as you start moving off to the one side or the other, or even above or below, say, for example, if you're on the floor doing floor exercises or stretching or something like that, then it's going to start looking a little funky. The black level is going to increase. The contrast, which is the difference between the brightest and the darkest parts of the picture, is going to decrease. The colors might start looking a little weird. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do about it. These LCD TVs have incorporated all sorts of what I call Band-Aids to fix problems that plasmas don't have to begin with, like black level, using dynamic LED dimming and so on to increase black level, frame interpolation, these 120 hertz LCD TVs and 240 hertz, which sharpen up motion blur, which LCD TVs suffer from a lot more than plasmas. Plasmas don't have these problems to begin with. But if you're in a bright room, plasmas simply don't put out as much light as LED TVs.
Well, and the screens also act as mirrors. I mean, they reflect everything in the room if it's
that
too bright.
Tom made that point as well. Plasmas typically have a very shiny screen. And so, particularly in dark scenes, you'll see reflections of yourself. Sweating to the oldies, I guess. But LCD TVs, some of them, not all of them, but many of them, have a more matte finish screen. So that's going to be better for a bright light environment as well. Samsungs typically have a pretty shiny screen themselves. They claim that it gives you better black levels, and it may very well, but it's also shiny, so it reflects light more. But most LCDs have a more matte screen. If you're looking at certainly Me Too in the chat room is pointing out that certain types of LCDs give you better off-angle, off-axis performance, and that's the type of panel called IPS, which is in-plane switching, which is a technical term I won't go into now. But LG uses that, Vizio uses that, Panasonic uses that, as opposed to Samsung and Sony, which use what's called VA, vertical alignment. Again, too technical to get into right now, but that gives you better black levels, but it gives you worse off-axis performance. So if off-axis performance is more important to you than black level and pure black level, I would go with a Panasonic or a Vizio or an LG. I think Toshiba also uses IPS.
How big a screen are you looking for?
Well, we have a fairly small apartment here, so it wouldn't be very large. I would say somewhere in the 42 to 50-inch range, I would suspect.
About average these days.
Yeah. Yeah. The average screen that people are buying is larger than it used to be. And it's a good thing, too.
Right.
Because people, when they replace their old CRT, which is yours is 30 inches, I think you said. You know, they think about getting something in the 30, 32, 37 inch range. It's generally too small, especially for high definition. Now, your CRT probably isn't high definition, correct?
Correct.
So you can get a much larger screen for a given distance away and still see a beautiful, in fact, see a really beautiful picture, a lot better than what you're seeing now. So I would definitely recommend that you look in the 47, 50 inch range. How far away will you be from the TV typically?
Well, like I say, it's an exercise room, so it's going to be varying depending on the movement we do in the room. But, you know, it could be from 4 to 8 feet away and then various distances left and right also.
Sure, sure. David Bix in the chat room is saying he has a Toshiba, isn't IPS, but as far as he knows, but the viewing angles are excellent. Not really sure what the magic is. I haven't been that impressed with Toshiba TVs that I've seen lately, but I haven't reviewed any, and David's saying his is working very well. So, you know, that might be a way to go. For the budget conscious, I generally recommend Vizio LCD TVs. They really do a very good job.
We have a Vizio as a second TV in our house, and it's performed extremely well, about 4 years old.
Yeah. David Bix once again says the 50L2200U is a great buy. Direct lit LED, 50-inch, 1080p, excellent picture, street price $500 for a 50-inch. So that's like another thing about TVs, man. The prices are coming down so much.
Yeah. So the main thing I'm getting out of this is that I'd be looking for an LED TV with IPS.
Correct.
All right.
Correct. You got it. Well, by George, I think he's got it.
Than I had before. Thank
sold.
You very much.
Sold. Thank you so much. Okay, let's see. Let's go to Tim in L.A., California. We got another minute or two. Let's see if we can get one in real quick. Hey, Tim, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek.
Hi, Scott. I need your help. I have a man cave that's located directly below our bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And I like to play video games and sometimes it gets a little loud with my surround sound. So what I have a Samsung TV and a Samsung DVD surround sound player. I know not the best in the world, but for my little man cave, it's quite adequate.
It's DVD, not Blu-ray?
It's a Blu-ray.
Blu-ray. Okay, good.
Yeah. And I used to have a Panasonic that allowed me to put my headphone mini jack right in the front, and I could, with a wire, you know, listen to my headphones. Well, that DVD, that player died. So I bought a Samsung, and it doesn't have a mini jack in it, and I'm having trouble getting the sound. So I had to do it from the TV, the back of the TV with a mini jack. And now I've got this wire running across
the floor. So you're not using an external sound system. You don't have an AV receiver with speakers.
No, it's all one unit. The Samsung Blu-ray player is the surround sound unit.
Well, what is actually producing the sound? Is it the speakers in the TV, or do you have external speakers of some sort?
Yes, there's external speakers all around the room.
Oh, okay. And what's driving those?
The Samsung Blu-ray player. It's one unit.
Home theater in a box.
Oh, so it's a home theater in a box. Now I understand. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Cool summer evening, smooth wooden floor, sweet old time music.
All right, on in 3, 2, 1.
Waltzing.
Welcome back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you've got a home theater question, please call 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. Now, we were talking before the break to Tim in L.A. Tim, you with us? I'm not sure if he's still with us. He's on the line, but here he is. David, you had something to say about this. We were talking about needing some other headphone solution than what he was able to do before. The new Samsung, I think, home theater in a box, doesn't have a headphone output, which a lot of, you know, this is starting to disappear, and I wonder why. I really don't know.
Yeah, higher-end pieces seem to have them, but the lower-end ones, they seem to be going the way of the dodo bird.
Weird.
What game system are you using?
I'm using Xbox.
Xbox 360?
Yes.
Okay, what you may want to do is go out and purchase headphones like Turtle Beach. My son recommends the PX21s, and that'll plug directly into the USB port on the Xbox 360, and you get your sound through that versus using your stereo speakers. Then you can play it as loud as you want without angering she who must not be angered.
Yes, but what do I do about watching a TV show or a movie? You know, some of the movies get pretty loud. And the only mini jack in the back of the TV, there's no volume control or anything, and that's a problem. So is there any way to do it? I understand the Xbox now, and I'll do that.
Yeah, you can do that. Your only other option would be
some wireless headphones.
Wireless headphones.
And the wireless headphones, I'm not a big expert on wireless headphones, I will tell you. The website to go to for that is innerfidelity.com, and that's a site devoted to headphones, and so there should be a lot of good recommendations there, but you should be able to find a set of wireless headphones that plug into that mini jack on the back of the TV, and the transmitter does, and then you've got this transmitter, and then you've got these wireless headphones, so there's no cable snaking across the floor, and the transmitter might very well have a volume control. Although that's yet another remote to deal with.
Right.
Which is kind of a drag.
My mom has some older, I think, Sennheisers, something. And they actually use RCA out. They use one of the audio outputs from the TV.
Exactly. The Sue in the chat room is saying that she's got some great Sennheiser headphones that plug into RCA jacks as well. And David Bix is pointing out another great website for headphone info, which is Headfi, HEAD-FI.org. Which is another, I know them as well. It's a great site for headphones. So those are two good recommendations right there. But you're right. It's becoming more of a problem because TVs used to have headphone jacks.
Right.
And they don't anymore. So anyway.
They're too skinny.
Yeah. TVs have become so skinny that there's no room for anything. And certainly the speakers that are built into them are, pardon the expression, crapola.
Yeah, and Insane Techie says the gaming headsets can be used with an optical TV out.
Oh, that's a good point.
So there's another option.
Sure, if you look for a set of wireless headphones that has an optical digital audio input, then you go from the optical out of the TV to the optical in of this transmitter, and then that transmits to your wireless headphones.
Great.
Oh, and here we go. Ice Cool in the chat room says, I use Sony wireless headphones, and they have their own volume on them from
Walmart.
So there are choices out there. All right?
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for calling. Okay, let's see. Jason, also in L.A., has a question about TVs. Welcome.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
Good, thanks. How can we help you?
Good. Well, I'm in the market for TV, probably like 32 inches, a little budget conscious, and I'm looking at a Toshiba. But I also heard you say earlier that Vizio is really good. So I just want to get like your general advice on what would be a good, solid purchase.
Generally, for the budget conscious, my first go-to choice is Vizio. They make a really good product. I've been very impressed with all the ones I've seen. I normally look at larger ones than 32. That's okay. Pretty small, but I mean, in these days.
But my neighbor has a 32-inch Vizio. Yeah. I have a 32-inch Samsung. We both have them in our garages.
Uh-huh.
And either one is fine. And the reason why he went with Vizio over the Samsung, because it was on sale at Costco, it was $50 less.
Mm.
So, I mean, all the TVs in that range are generally pretty equal.
I would say so. Yeah. Chivo in the chat room is saying Vizio is the best bang for your buck, and I generally agree.
Okay.
But I think
you need to get a 70-inch.
Toshiba or Toshiba bad. I mean, I'm not crazy on picture. I just need something kind of basic. I just don't want the thing to crap out on me in, like, you know, a year or two or something like that.
Yeah, I understand that. Toshiba's not bad. It's not generally my first choice. And I see on this call screener thing here, you also mentioned RCA, which has been out of business for a while, and they're just now starting to come back. So we don't know. We don't know the quality of RCA in terms of its recent product. Hopefully I'll get a chance to look at one or more of them at some point in the near future. They were at CES. They made kind of a big splash at CES. Toshiba, you know, is not a bad brand. As I say, I generally go to Vizio as my first choice for
budget.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Because Best Buy's got a Toshiba on sale, 32-inch for $230, and then I'm looking at a Vizio at Target for $250. I'm just trying to figure out what to do. Okay.
It's not going to be a big difference between the two.
For me, depending on what the TV is being used for, I would tend to if to go for the one that's the best deal. Go look at the pictures. If the pictures are equal and one's $20-$25 less, save the $25.
Well, the Vizio is LED, which, I mean, I don't know if I'll be able to see a difference. I think you just mentioned with the last caller or two callers ago that LED does make a substantial viewing difference.
It does. I prefer LED over more conventional fluorescent illumination. And fluorescent illumination is going away. It's essentially gone now. If Toshiba has any that are still available, they're on their last legs, not in terms of their longevity necessarily, but because fluorescent tubes have mercury in them, they're being phased out because of environmental concerns.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So
okay.
That's why you're going to see fewer and fewer of these fluorescent ones. Fluorescent backlit ones, and besides which, LEDs work better in my opinion. So I'd go with an LED for sure.
LED, okay, great, sounds good. All right, so Vizio's a good way to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Thanks
you
so
too.
Much. Okay, let's go to Alan, also in LA.
20 seconds.
We're not. Oh, you know what, Alan? Hang on the line there. We're not going to have really enough time to answer your question. So just hang on there. We'll get to you next right after the break. I want to let everybody know that Leo Laporte is in New Orleans this weekend getting ready for the Super Bowl while I sit here enjoying my time with all of you talking home theater. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after this. You're listening to Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo this fine Saturday as he is in New Orleans in preparation for going to the Super Bowl.
Go 49ers.
Go Niners. Now, I'm so not a sports person, but I used to live in the Bay Area, so I can understand rooting for the Niners, and I suppose I even will. I'm disappointed that he didn't bring his vuvuzela with him. It's sitting right here. Yeah. And I told him online in Facebook, I said, you should take your vuvuzela. But he didn't.
He didn't.
Doggone it. Well, anyway. So here we are. That last musical piece, by the way, was an early 17th century song about the evils of tobacco. So just wanted to let you know that. And we were talking with, or we weren't talking with, we were about to talk to him. Alan in L.A. Alan, are you with us?
Had a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You bet. Welcome to the show. How can we help
you? Thank you. Since it is Super Bowl Sunday, I know this is a good time to look for TV sets. And since I just had a short stay in the hospital, nothing serious, and a moment of weakness, my wife said that maybe we can get a new TV set.
playing the sympathy card. I like it.
That advantage. Right now, the two sets I'm looking at are the Panasonic UT50 and the Samsung 550, both plasma sets.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you say good things about Vizio, and so I'm willing to consider that. I'm also looking at plasma because I found that plasma is more reasonably priced than LED, but if there's something in that same price range, I'd consider it. But the one thing that is bothering me is that none of these sets are known for their audio. Now, I grant you that I don't need perfect sound because I know it's a smaller speaker, and if I really want good sound, I would need to buy one of those
sound bar.
Sound bars or something like that.
Or a full speaker system, yeah.
Right. but at least I need something decent. So are these at least decent sets? Is Vizio sound acceptable? Because that was the one thing I heard was the major drawback with Vizio.
Well, it's a drawback with just about every TV these days. I've been particularly unhappy with the internal sound of Samsung TVs.
Okay.
They make a great TV. Don't get me wrong. In terms of picture quality, they're up there. I would probably give Panasonic a slight edge.
Okay.
The UT50 is a great TV. Really nice. But don't expect good sound from any of them.
Okay.
It's just not going to happen.
It's a matter of physics. You have a real small cabinet, and so you don't have a cavity to project the sound real well. That's where the sound bar comes in, because you know it's amazing what 3 or 4 inches of depth can do.
Seriously. So if you're going for it, and your wife's okay with buying a new TV, and congratulations for getting out of the hospital, and glad it wasn't too serious, then I would put into the budget also an inexpensive sound bar, because you're going to get significantly better sound out of that, and you're not going to have. Your wife's not going to wonder why she ever agreed to this if you put speakers all around the house, all around the room. You know what I mean?
Got it. So you said also said that the Vizio is also an acceptable alternative for what I'm looking at.
It is, but Vizio doesn't make plasma. And here we get back to the question of plasma versus LCD or LED, illuminated LCD.
Right.
And if you've got some control of the ambient light in your room, and or you watch mostly in the evening when ambient light doesn't have to be a problem, just turn off the lights, plasma is going to give you a better picture quality overall, in general.
Okay.
As I said, plasma, LCD TVs and LED TVs have implemented all sorts of things to fix problems that they have that plasmas don't even have in the first place.
Got it. I see.
So...
The other quick question I have for you is that I have a Costco nearby, and I also have a local retailer that I've done business with who I very much like. The one reason I would go with Costco is because their extended warranty is much cheaper than this local retailer. Is that even a consideration?
Boy, that's a question. David, do you normally get extended warranties?
I don't.
I normally don't either.
Generally speaking, I mean, electronics... go bad real quickly.
If they're going to go bad, they go bad right away. And they're well within the manufacturer's warranty. Now, I have heard some horror stories. I've gotten emails from people who have said, my XYZ TV crapped out on me, 2 days after the 1 year manufacturer warranty. It's going to happen once in a while. And, what can you say?
I mean, what's the cost difference between the warranties?
$125 versus $50.
That's a substantial difference.
That's a substantial difference. Yeah.
That's a substantial difference. That's the reason why.
Yeah. But,
I'm one of those people who likes to support local retailers. That
absolutely.
Kind of want to go that way, but at the same time, if Costco's got a great deal, I'm trying to be a bit frugal. So.
Yeah. I'm with you in supporting local retailers. Absolutely. I mean, Costco's great. I shop at Costco all the time.
Yep.
But when I can, I go to local retailers, and there are so few of them for electronics anymore. So if you can, and as far as the extended warranty is concerned, that depends more on your personal feeling about safety and protecting yourself from stuff. I'm a big believer in insurance. I'll say that right away. I mean, obviously, I have homeowner's insurance and car insurance and health insurance and stuff like that. But, J5 in the chat room is saying, remember that many credit cards have extended warranty as part of their purchase plan, too. So that you might check into that as well.
Got it.
That's a great point, J5.
And there may be aftermarket warranties you can explore
there
as
are,
well.
There are, certainly.
Depending on the cost of the TV, you'd look at the... If you can afford to lose $800 on a TV if it goes out, I mean, it depends on how much $800 means to you. If $800 means a lot, then spending $50 on an extended warranty is a good peace of mind.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your help.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks so much. Okay, we got Richard in Burbank, California, my hometown. Gotta talk to Richard. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure speaking with you folks.
How can we help you?
Let me just give you a background. I have a 47-inch LCD Philips, top-of-the-line, 08 model. It's 4 years and three-quarter months old, and it's been a great TV. And the specs on it, it's a top-of-the-line. Just to give you an example, you've been talking a lot about speakers, and that's one reason why I bought this set. It had great sound. It has 30 watts RMS. That's quite a bit.
There you go.
Also, all the sound comes around out of it from around the sides and the top and the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And because of this great sound, I bought it, and I didn't have to buy external speakers. Now, what has happened now, just recently in the last couple of months, is I hear a kind of a cracking noise. It'll come on real quick, real short, and it sounds like it's in the lower frequency, and then it doesn't affect the picture or anything, but it repeats maybe. Sometimes I won't hear it for an hour. Other times I might hear it three or four times during an hour. Sometimes when a scene changes on the screen, I'll see it.
Hmm. You and see it or hear it. You'll hear it, right?
I mean, I'll hear it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to... can you give me an idea how much something like that might cost to fix, or should I just go and get a...
Or is it worth it? Let's talk about that when we come back. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek. Back after this.
3, 2, 1.
Our beautiful queens and princesses.
Welcome back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The voice you're hearing is my lovely wife, Joanna Kasdan, singing about The Rebel Girl, a song from the early 20th century labor movement. She sings a lot of different styles and things. Most of the music we're hearing today is written by her, but that particular one was one that she covered from long ago, written, I believe, by Joe Hill. Anyway, we were talking with Richard in Burbank about a crackling sound in his Philips TV. And, Richard, are you still there?
I sure am.
Very good. Okay, well, we've been talking a little bit about this. David, you thought it might be the power supply.
Potentially. I mean, that could be one of the things that could be.
I'm tending to think not only because you say that there's no effect on the picture, right?
Correct.
Okay. So the other thought you had was perhaps the audio board. And I know that you bought this TV for its audio quality, and it's probably not super thin, being a 2008 model for one thing, right? It's a couple inches deep.
Yes.
Which is one reason why it's got a better sound quality, because it's got more room to play with the sound quality.
Right.
Unfortunately, though, David and I both agree, it's generally not worth it to fix a broken TV these days. And especially given that Philips just last week announced that they are getting out of the consumer electronics business altogether.
Wow.
They do a lot of other things. They do light bulbs. They do medical equipment. They do a lot of different things. But just last week, some years ago, I don't think it was as early as 2008, but some years ago, they sold off a large part of their consumer market, consumer product division, to a Chinese company called Funai.
And yes. In fact, it was a couple of months after I bought this set.
Okay, so you got one of the last actual Philips-made TVs.
Yes.
But again, last week they announced they're out of it altogether now. They're just totally out of it. So, you know, getting it repaired would not be necessarily a good idea. We've gotten some people in the chat room saying, try, you know, I know you got this TV for its sound, but if you don't want to replace the TV, the thing to do might be to get an external speaker, a sound bar. We've been talking a lot about sound bars today, and that's probably the most cost-effective thing you can do to solve your problem. Would you agree, David?
Yeah, I would agree.
I appreciate that. Can I make one other mention of one factor that some TVs, why they don't have smearing is because they have their response time is really great. This one I bought was 2 milliseconds, and I've never had any smearing or with a lot of motion.
Well, that's a good point, and certainly 2 milliseconds is really fast for a TV from 2008.
That's on the sheet on the with all the information about it. Yeah, it's been a great set.
Right. However, I will point out also that the response time, the LCD response time, which is what he's talking about, is not the only factor in motion blur. Now, you say you're not seeing motion blur, and that's great.
Right.
But even there are TVs that have similarly short switching times that still exhibit motion blur. And the way that LCD TVs combat that is by either doing something called frame interpolation, where you've got 60 frames per second coming in, and the TV manufactures, synthesizes new frames to put in between them, calculating where objects in motion would be if there were actually 120 frames per second coming in. The other thing they do is flash the backlight, which is really only possible with LEDs. And when you flash the backlight and part of each frame is black, that does cut down on motion blur as well. Frame interpolation, though, pardon me, comes with a price. And the price is called the soap opera effect. And this makes, when you turn on this frame interpolation, it makes the video look like it was shot on video, like it was shot, like it was a soap opera. And most people that I know object to that more than they object to motion blur. Are you one of them, David?
Yes. I feel like I'm watching Toy Story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't mind it as much as most people, but I know I'm in the vast minority there, just the tiniest little minority on that one.
Thank you for your help.
You bet.
Thank you
pleasure.
For calling.
We got a few minutes left. Let's talk to Roger in Shell Knob, Mississippi. Roger, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. How you doing?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for being here to answer questions.
My pleasure.
I've got a Samsung 5-disc DVD sound surround sound system, 5.1 speaker system, and it only works for surround sound, and I would like to get something to hook up to my television that I can play music and hear it out of all four speakers.
Four speakers?
Plus I'd like surround sound also.
Well, now, is this a Samsung home theater in a box? Did you buy it with a...
Yes, it is.
So it's got a receiver and a 5-disc changer, apparently, and a set of 5.1 speakers.
Right. Wireless rear speakers also.
Oh, that's cool.
That's not a factor anymore. I can wire it now.
Yeah, there's no need to. I mean, if they work. But you want to be able to play music. I don't quite understand yet what you're trying to do here.
Well, it's great for surround sound.
Yeah.
But if I'm listening to Pandora or something on the television, you know, or something that's coming through like that,
if
I've got a stereo hooked up to it, or I'm listening to a CD on the DVD player, two speakers. I mean, that's it.
Does it have an all-channel surround or five-channel surround? All channels driven. A lot of the you have to go through the DSP modes.
Yeah, there are probably some modes in that device that will take a two-channel input, such as a CD, and expand it out to 5.1. So I would look in the manual of the receiver or the head unit, the brain of the thing, and see if it has modes that will expand, like Dolby Pro Logic 2, for example, will do that. DTS, some of DTS
Neo.
modes will do Neo.
DTS Neo.
Neo 6, I think, will do that as well. Yes, David Bix in the chat room is saying you want to use something like Pro Logic. So there should be a Pro Logic setting. Now, that'll take care of your CDs. But if you're listening to Pandora on your TV, if your TV is your online is your source for online audio, then what you want to do is take, and I hope your Samsung home theater in a box has this, the TV probably has an optical digital audio output. And
that's what I use.
Okay, you put that into the Samsung system.
Yes.
And you select that input and then just again apply this Pro Logic mode to that input. And you should hear the sound coming out of all the speakers.
Okay.
That is...
So I probably don't need to buy another home theater system?
No. Unless this... how old is the Samsung?
It's probably 4 years.
Well, you should be fine. Go look for the ProLogic mode and you'll be fine. Thanks so much for the call. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, back for one more hour after this.
On in 3, 2, and 1.
Well, hello there, and welcome to the Tech Guy Show with me, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Where's Leo? Good question. Maybe we should write a book. Put him in a picture. In fact, you could look for him tomorrow at the Super Bowl. I think there's a website that's going to be panning around the crowd. Maybe you might be able to find him. He's in New Orleans. He's going to attend the Super Bowl tomorrow. And so meanwhile, that means the ball is vacant. And he was kind enough to invite me to come and sit in for him today. And I'm so happy to do it. Always, anytime he wants, I will be here. Today, I am joined by my good friend David Vaughn, who is a writer of product reviews and movie reviews for HomeTheater.com. David, thanks so much for being with
me. Scott, great being here.
It's always great. We should mention that this is, in fact, the two-year anniversary from the very first time you and I appeared on this show together.
Yep.
When Leo was on vacation, he asked me to sub for him, and I was only too happy to do it. It was in the old cottage studio, tiny little place.
The closet, yes.
And I invited you to come over and do that, and that was exactly 2 years ago. That was the Saturday before the Super Bowl. And look how far we've come.
Yes. We actually know what we're doing now.
Yeah, think of it. You write for HomeTheater.com, and I'm now writing for Secrets of Home Theater and High Fidelity at HomeTheaterHiFi.com. And I've just been appointed the editor of AVS Forum at AVSForum.com, which I'm very happy about. This is mostly a forum site, which you've been a member of for a long time.
Long time.
As I have. Which is a forum site, of course, is a place where people come and post questions and comments and start threads about the products that they own or questions that they have, what should they buy, that sort of thing. And now that the AVS Forum was purchased about a year ago and is under new management, they decided they wanted to expand beyond that. They want to keep that, of course, but they wanted to expand beyond it into adding other editorial content, which is where I come in. So I happen to be free and available, and they happen to need somebody with my particular skill set. So it was a good fit.
And it's a good match.
Thank you.
It's a very good match.
Thank you. AVS, by the way, stands for Audio Video Science. And so these are pretty geeky folks.
Sometimes a little too geeky, but we won't go there.
Well, this is certainly one of the things that I want to bring to the table, which is I don't want to, drive any geeks away, but I do want to try and be a little more inclusive and bring newbies in, people who might be interested in, you know, getting the best picture quality they can or the best sound quality they can without getting super geeky. They may not be interested in that super geeky stuff. So one of the things I'm going to be doing is adding content that is more inviting to the non-hardcore geek. Plenty of hardcore geek stuff there. So right. All you hardcore geeks, don't worry. Nothing's going to change with that. But I'm hoping to bring some more folks in as well. So do look at avsforum.com, and you will start seeing my byline there more and more. And look around. It's a huge site. It's a huge site. And they get almost 5 million unique visitors a month.
Yeah, so. It's arguably the number one AV site on the internet.
Yep.
Ton of information there.
Yep. Yeah, if you have any questions, by the way, about anything audio video, post it there and you will get tons of response.
Sometimes too many. You look at like the Oppo Blu-ray player threads. If I go on a business trip and I'm gone 3 or 4 days, I'll come back. There'll be 400 or 500 posts.
Yes.
That I try and read, but a lot of times I just skip to the end.
Yeah. You know, after a while, your eyes sort of glaze over. But people are passionate about this hobby.
Yes.
Which is why we can do this show on these fine radio stations, because people are passionate about it. And even if you're not passionate about it as a geek, you want... You know, people want a good experience, an audio video experience at home, as we've been seeing all day today. People are asking, you know, what TV to buy, getting better sound quality, all that kind of stuff, is of concern to most people out there. Even if you don't have a dedicated home theater, which you do, I do, but we're geeks.
Right.
You know, but there was one guy who called in. He said he wanted a TV for his exercise room. You know, and a lot of people put them in their multi-purpose room. So there's all sorts of levels of audio video needs. And I'm certainly dedicated, and I know you are too, to addressing those needs and getting helping people get the most they can out of the money they have to spend.
Right. And I mean, when someone asks me, hey, I want a new TV. The first question I ask is, how much do you want to spend?
Right.
And then you can cater something to that. And you ask the question, well, do you want surround sound? Do you need a universal remote with that? All the questions that you ask, and then you can put something in that box that they give you to use.
Exactly. Speaking of universal remotes, I wanted to make sure to mention, for years, I have recommended, universal remotes, of course, are remotes that you can program to operate your several different devices, because of course we all know the stereotypical image of a coffee table full of remotes, one remote for your TV and one for your receiver and one for your Blu-ray player and blah, 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 blah. You end up with this huge bunch of remotes and it becomes totally unwieldy. Nobody in the family can operate it except you. And so you can put that all together into one universal remote. And there are several companies that do it. The one that I always recommend for the do-it-yourselfer, the person who doesn't want to hire an installer, is the Harmony remotes from a company called Logitech. We all know Logitech. They make computer speakers and mice and keyboards and all sorts of peripherals. But they bought a company that invented this thing called the Harmony remote, which was great because all you had to do was plug it in by USB to your computer, go to their website, tell their website what equipment you have. I have this TV, I have that AVR, and how do you use them? Well, when I'm watching TV, I change the channels with the cable box, and I change the volume with the AV receiver. And you tell it how each of those activities work. It's what was called activities-based. So you pushed a button that said watch TV, and immediately it went and turned on all the right stuff, set everything up to the right inputs. You didn't even have to program any of that. You just told it all the stuff, gave it the information about how your system worked, and then the website downloaded the information to the remote. Beautiful. Worked great. I still use the Harmony One in my home theater to control my system. But unfortunately, the Harmony remote division of Logitech has been losing money lately. Probably at least in part because now we're starting to get all these control apps on smartphones and tablets, right? Now, I myself am not a fan of touchscreen remotes of any kind, be it on a smartphone or tablet or a touchscreen dedicated remote, because you have to look at it to find the buttons. You can't find the buttons by feel as you can on a dedicated button remote. Still in all, that's what's becoming popular. And so the Harmony remotes have lost money. Logitech is now talking, at least, I don't know if they've actually done it yet or not, but I know they're planning to divest themselves of their Harmony remote division because they're going to focus more on other things that are profitable. Well, they're a business, you
right.
know, they got to do what they got to do. But I'm very sad about it because I love the Harmony remotes.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I mean, that's the remote, my go-to remote to recommend for people because it is so easy to program. I could spend 10 minutes with somebody showing them how to do it, and then if they ever change a component, they can go back in and change it real easy.
Yep.
Unlike, you know, URC, which I use personally. I love my MX-980. It's probably the best remote I've ever had.
That's another company, by the way. It's called Universal Remote Control.
Yeah.
URC, right.
But when I change a component, I have to go and take a webinar to figure out how to reprogram the remote again because
exactly.
It's so complicated.
Exactly. Now, installers prefer the
right.
URC because it's more flexible, more robust. You can do more with it. You can program it to do more things.
Right.
But it requires programming.
Yep.
Anyway, that's a little bit of news right there. We're going to be right back after this. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, we'll have more with Scott Wilkinson in just a little bit. I just wanted to talk about ShareFile.com. It is a great solution. If you are currently emailing files to clients and colleagues, you know what a nightmare that is. First of all, the bounce backs, right? Because you can't send big files through email. The lack of security is a big issue, too. If you're in the medical profession, HIPAA says you can't send that patient record in the clear over email. And, of course, then there's the issue of email attachments often being security hazards. Forget email. Share file instead. It's HIPAA compliant, compliant with all federal regulations in many industries. It's secure. You don't get the bounce backs. You can send giant 4 gigabyte files if you want. You have complete control of those files. Let me show you my share file account. This is how I send files, for instance, to the radio stations. We often do that. Tomorrow's show, for instance, I record it ahead of time. So I have all the voice tracks here in my Super Bowl show, and I can send them to Kyle. Here, I'll send one right now. I'll show you how it works. Now, I could do this in Outlook with the Outlook plugin, but I'll do it from the website, and you can see. Incidentally, all I did with those files I just saved them out to a local folder on my hard drive right here, and then the ShareFile sync toy syncs them up. It uploads them to the ShareFile servers. By the way, that's nice because I have a local copy here. I have a copy on ShareFile. I can visit that copy in the cloud anytime. I can use the ShareFile apps to do that. And then when I want to send it, I don't have to attach it to an email. I'm just going to send Kyle a link. So you can either do it this way through the form on the website, or I can do this. And I like to do this because I can show you all the features. So I can have an email sent to me when the item's down, when Kyle downloads the show. I can say Kyle has to enter his name and address before he downloads. I can set the expiration so it can go forever. Or in this case, I don't want anybody to download that after, say, a week because it's going to be obsolete. And I'll let him download as many times as he wants, but you could limit that as well. Some government regulations involved there. You want to control your files. That's the point. Now what I'm going to get is a link. Now I can embed this link. It's an HTTPS link notice, so it's secure. I can embed this link in an email. But I'll copy it to the clipboard, and what I'll do is I'll paste it in here and show you what he's going to see. Very beautiful. You're going to see the company logo and just a download button. You can see what the file is going to be, how big it is. It's clean, simple. They don't have to sign up for anything. They just get the file. Believe me, this works great even with less sophisticated people, and that's one of the reasons I like ShareFile. You try it free for 30 days. You tell me. Go to ShareFile.com. Now, when you do that, there is a couple of places you can click for the free trial, but I want you to do the one at the top. It's fastest and the easiest. You'll see radio listeners. Click here. Pretend you're listening to the radio right now. And then do that. Start your free trial. They'll give you a chance to pick the industry that you're in. And they have customizations for every possible industry, from accounting to web design and everywhere in between. You don't have to do that, but it's nice because you can see the customizations, make it compliant with the regulations and so forth. And then I would appreciate it if you would use our offer code TECHGUY when they ask you so they know that you heard it on the Tech Guy podcast. That's one word, TECHGUY. ShareFile.com. Stop emailing attachments. Start doing it with ShareFile. I think you'll like it. Now let's get back to Scott Wilkinson, already in progress.
All right, guys, on in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is Joanna Kasdan singing one of her lovely songs, and I have got a bunch of calls. We're going to try and get through as many of them as we can. Let us start with Mark in Temecula. Mark, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, and David Vaughn, the other home theater geek. Mark, are you there?
So I'm having a kind of a quirky issue. I have a LG BP620 Blu-ray player and a Samsung plasma TV.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I'm playing Blu-rays or streaming anything from my Blu-ray, about 3 or 4 times per hour, I'll get a weird glitch where the screen goes black, but I can still hear the audio. And this is running some external speakers. If I cancel the external speakers and I use my TV speakers, the opposite happens. I hear the audio. I mean, I don't hear the audio, but the screen, I can still see the picture.
Wow.
I tried different HDMI cables. I've tried different inputs. No solution. If I watch cable or if I stream through my Roku, there's no problem. I returned the Blu-ray player, bought the same one from a different location. Same issue.
Wow.
Very perplexed.
Well, David, perplexed. You've had trouble with LG Blu-ray players, and you've reviewed several.
Yeah, they're kind of quirky at times.
Yeah.
It sounds like an HDCP issue, but normally you'd lose both audio and video. That's the weird.
Yeah, the weird thing is that you're losing one in one configuration, you're losing audio in one configuration and video in the other configuration. That makes no sense to me at all.
Is this just streaming or watching Blu-rays as well?
Both Blu-ray and streaming. One thing I did notice also that with either configuration, there is like a weird flash in the screen for a second, like a line goes through it for a minute. Well, a second, rather.
Hmm. I think you've stumped us. I don't know what that could be. My only suggestion would be to try and... Can you still return the Blu-ray player?
I think it's probably too late on this.
Too late on that.
Try a different TV?
Either try a different TV or try a different Blu-ray player.
I mean, try and change the variable at some point and just troubleshoot it.
Exactly. I mean, if you can borrow a Blu-ray player from somebody that's not an LG, you know, a Samsung or a Sony or something, Panasonic, just borrow one and see if the same problem happens. That would be the first thing I would do.
Okay, that's actually a good idea. Yeah, that way I can eliminate hopefully one.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, and have you updated the firmware on the Blu-ray player?
I called customer support and went through that.
Okay.
Yeah, Rusty Bones in the chat room made the same suggestion. And Beef Team said the same thing I did, borrow another Blu-ray player.
Yeah, I think that's a smart thing to do, at least check that out.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. Thanks so much for calling. Good luck.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, David in Spring Hill, Florida, you're next. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome.
Well, hello, Scott, and welcome also to David Vaughn.
Thank you.
Sounds like the right team to answer a question that I have.
We're the car guys of home theater, I think.
Thank you for being there for Leo. I listen every weekend. I understand a lot of what you talk about, and there's a lot that I don't understand anymore.
Well, I try to make things as clear as I can, but it's a very complex subject. So how can we help you today?
Okay, Scott, here's where I am. I'm looking to get a new TV for my bedroom. I have in my living room a full home theater, 42-inch Samsung DLP with a home theater. I have a Harmony One, which I love. Thank you for talking about that.
You bet. My favorite remote, too.
Yeah, they're just amazing. Got a complete Sony system, 5.1, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
In my bedroom, and the reason I'm limited, I have the 42 inches because I'm limited. I have one of those big entertainment centers with the cabinets underneath on both sides and what have you, okay? And it looks terrific, so I'm not going to change that.
Great.
What I do want to do is change out the flat screen old CRT that I have in my bedroom. 24-inch Magnavox, it works well, works fine, and here's my problem with it. I use it for three different things. I have my cable box plugged into it with RCA cables, with RCA plugs.
Yep.
I have the CD, DVD, VHS player plugged in there. That's a JVC.
Yep.
And I have my video security system from Super Circuits plugged into that.
Okay.
Video cameras and what have you.
Sure.
So I can select from my remote, and it's a standard... DirecTV remote that I have, and I can access them easily by whichever button I push on the remote. That's fine.
Sure.
But when I get to looking at a new set, like for example, I'm looking at a Sony 46-inch 1080p LED.
Yep.
I really have trouble in reading a lot of the specs that will tell me which new set will give me those three inputs that I presently have.
Well, that's actually a pretty good question because most of those inputs are what we call legacy inputs.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
They are, the VCR is undoubtedly composite, which is a yellow RCA cord connector. The security camera, probably composite, right?
Yep, well, it's composite, right?
Right, and the third one, I've forgotten what it was?
The cable box.
Cable box, that's what does that have coming out of it?
They all have, they're all red, yellow, and white.
So the cable box is not high def?
No, it's not. But, of course, I'll need a new cable box.
You'll need a new cable box. When you get that TV, you'll want high def coming into that TV.
Exactly. Right.
So that won't be a problem because that new high def cable box will have HDMI, and you'll just connect that.
A new TV.
Yep.
So I'll be in good shape.
You'll be good in good shape there.
Right.
Now, whether or not a TV, you can find a TV that has two composite inputs for those other two devices.
That's the problem.
That's the problem. Most modern TVs have one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One composite input, which isn't enough for you.
That's correct.
So I think unless you're going to go with some sort of AVR and put a whole audio system into your bedroom, which I kind of doubt you're going to do.
Absolutely right.
Then probably the best solution is a simple switch box. It adds a level of complexity and a level that is not ideal. I agree.
Yeah. The complexity is not a problem. The convenience of pushing a button to select which of the three inputs I want.
Now you have to push two buttons.
Right.
And I'm looking at mono price right now.
Yeah.
And I don't even see any composite switch boxes anymore.
Oh, man.
So maybe Radio Shack will have one, but I'm not sure if it'll be remote controlled or if it's if it's going to be a manual.
So the only other thing I would suggest is you just have to look for a TV that has two composite inputs.
Right.
You know, I don't know that there are any. I'd have to do some pretty serious research to find out.
I've been on the net trying to find it, and I'm kind of stumped, and therefore that's why.
And I wish I had better news for you because I can't think of any that do. I don't even look at composite inputs anymore.
What about the possibility of replacing the CD, DVR, VHS?
That's another possibility. We'll talk about it when we get back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Horses he borrowed from his dad. He cracks his whip so lively, just to see his lady smile. But she knows he's only putting on the style.
Putting on. And now live back to the Scott Wilkinson Show. All right, you're on.
But all the young folks are doing it all the while.
I know I am. That last music selection was Putting on the Style with banjo by Pete Seeger. Joanna and Pete and a bunch of people recorded some music from the Catskills, and he was singing there in the chorus, no doubt, as well. And, yes, Mrs. Scott is in the chat room, by the way. So nice to see you there. Now, we were talking earlier with David about replacing his TV. David, are you still with us?
Yes, Scott, absolutely.
There you are.
Your wife has a wonderful voice.
Oh, thanks.
Great to hear music that I can understand the words.
You know, she is also a speech pathologist and a vocal coach, and lyric intelligibility is very important to her, so thank you for mentioning that.
I'm sure everybody listening knows the stuff that passes for music these days, which really isn't.
I just want to know when a rap album's coming out.
I think that's going to be a while.
That's going to be a while. Getting back to your issue, you have an old CRT TV that you're going to replace.
Absolutely.
With a high-def TV. You got a cable box, a DVD-VCR combo, and a security camera. And the DVD-VCR combo and the security camera have composite outputs, legacy outputs. And yes, most new TVs only have one composite input. So how are you going to be able to connect all those things? The cable box is no problem because mm-hmm. you're going to get a new high-def cable box. It's going to have HDMI.
Right.
The two other – there are a couple things we've been talking about offline here in the break. One of them is somebody in the chat room had a great idea, which was to take the security camera feed and feed it into the VCR, the DVD VCR, which must have a composite input.
It does.
And then take the composite output from the VCR, connect it to the new TV. Then you still are going to have to push two buttons.
Right.
One to select the composite input on the TV, and the other one to select that input on the VCR.
Right. I understand that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's one solution. Another solution is, as I think I mentioned before, was getting a composite switcher. Now, we've been looking around online, and a couple of composite switchers we came up with that give you three or four inputs and one output, but you have to manually go over to them and switch them with a physical switch on the box.
Okay.
But there's one that we found. David, you probably have it up on your screen.
Actually, I took it down, but it's on Amazon. There was one with a remote. You could switch with a remote, a composite switcher. So if you just do a composite switch, do a search on an Amazon search engine, you'll find it there.
Okay. All right. That sounds terrific.
So that's another remote to deal with, unless you get a universal and sort of combine them together.
Well, David, I might go with a Harmony over there.
Yeah, well, you know, it was as long as they're available, which is not going to be that much longer, at least not from Logitech. We hope somebody buys the Harmony remotes. Ideally, some company like URC buys them and then offers them as a consumer-based product rather than an installer-based product. So,
a wonderful, wonderful thing. The other option I was thinking of is just get a new CD DVR.
That was the other option that we looked at. I looked on Walmart. They had a Philips that's now defunct, but Philips had a DVD VCR combo that had component output on it,
which is the red, green, and blue connectors on the back. And certainly any new TV will have at least one of those.
Yeah, component versus composite.
Correct. Exactly right. There you go. So several solutions.
I'm looking at a Sony 46-inch KD Elliott at a 645.
Yeah, that would be good. I like Sony TVs in general. They're very good.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's an excellent choice. All right. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Good luck with all of that. Let's go to Tanger in L.A. You're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek.
Hey, Scott. Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help?
I'm looking to first of all, I'm one of the plasma or nothing type. that's basically, I have about in 2011, Christmas time, a Panasonic GT30 with a THX certification.
Sure. Nice TV.
I love that TV. Still have it. I'm looking to buy my grandfather, have him get a TV. He's going from a 32-inch Sony CRT and his first flat panel. And what I want to know, one thing I have not researched, wanted to know your opinion on, I heard you mention earlier about an hour or so ago, about Samsung plasmas. Mm-hmm. And, like I said, I'm biased towards Panasonic, particularly after they consumed Pioneer's technology. And I don't know how the Samsung plasmas stand up to them. I want your opinion on that.
Sure. Well, Panasonic sort of gobbled up Pioneer technology. That's kind of a separate issue. Their brand new flagship that they just introduced at CES that we're going to see this year really does finally approach the old Pioneer Kuro performance. But again, that's a separate issue.
Sure.
The question you have is, how does the Samsung plasma stack up to the Panasonic? I'd say they're very comparable. I tend to have a slight preference for Panasonic.
Okay.
From what I've seen, the black levels are probably a little deeper, generally speaking, but it's not a big difference.
Okay. Wow.
I would have no trouble recommending a Samsung plasma. Let me put it that way.
My one issue with the Samsung plasma, I think their glass is shinier.
Okay.
That's just one thing that I've always noticed about them. In a dark room, not a big deal, but if you have any ambient light, it seems to be more reflective than a Panasonic. And again, in my experience, seeing them side by side.
Yeah, I haven't seen any Samsung plasmas lately. Probably not for the last 6 months.
Just for the sake of discussion, if I had to choose or entertain the idea, a Panasonic plasma or a Samsung LED.
Panasonic plasma.
The room it's going to be in is it's not a bright light. It's going to be straight on view.
Right. And if it's not if you don't have to have it in a bright light environment, if you can tone down the room lights or watch at night mostly, David and I are in agreement. Plasma is the way to go.
Cool.
It's really much better, generally speaking, than LCDs in terms of off axis performance, black level performance, motion blur. All of those things are going to be better on a plasma. It looks more cinematic, many people say.
I'm one of those people who don't like the soap opera look. In fact, the only time I actually use that is maybe when I'm watching sports. Everything else, I have it on THX or my own custom setup.
There you go.
One of your previous callers had mentioned, and this is the problem that I have, is now, as much as I love my TV, the little strip of speaker at the bottom of it are absolutely horrid.
Horrible.
And so one thing I was just going to suggest, I haven't really heard on any of the shows talked about, is I paired a, I don't really want a home theater, and I don't mind having speakers on the wall so much, but I use a Yamaha Cinema Projector, which is very different than a sound bar.
Oh! It's a similar thing.
Love it. I mean, it's got 38 little tiny speakers, and then two bigger ones on the sides, and then I have a sub, and it just bounces sound off the wall at different intervals.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
I absolutely love it. And frankly, one other cool thing about it is, on occasion for church events, I actually take it with me, which is ultra portable. Use my Airport Express with AirTunes, run the music off my phone.
Perfect.
And plug it in. So that's one option for people who are looking for good sound, better than a sound bar, but without mounting speakers on their walls.
Yeah.
A Yamaha Cinema Projector.
Right. Well, it is kind of a sound bar. It has a sound bar shape to it, right? I mean, it's a long, thin thing.
It has a sound bar shape to it, but it functions. It's just the way that it operates is very different. The amount of speakers are different. And plus, it's essentially basically a receiver built in as well. It's got a lot of inputs on the back.
Oh, excellent. Very good. Thank you. I always agree Yamaha. Those Yamaha products are great. We'll be right back with Dick DiBartolo. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I don't know why that stopped. Sorry, I think I'm... Sorry about that. My elbow must have hit the space bar.
Oops.
Yeah, oops. There are days when... All right, we're going to have a live read here. So if you want to... when you finish up with Dick, go into the live read. That's usually how Leo will do it.
Okay.
All right, you're on.
Welcome back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek in the home stretch. One more segment to go here on a lovely Saturday in Petaluma, California. And joining me in studio, of course, is David Vaughn, my co-home theater geek. So glad to have you with me.
Great to be here.
And also joining us on Skype is none other than Mad's maddest writer and the gizwiz himself, Dickie DiBartolo. Hey, Dick, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Having a wonderful time here today. Leo is off in New Orleans eating beignets and drinking chicory coffee.
Yes,
and
yes, yes.
Listening
and then I think he's going to go to a football game or something.
Yeah, but I think he has. Yeah.
I'm only jealous of the beignets.
I am too, yeah. Did you see that photo on Facebook of him with the powdered sugar on his nose?
He has that all the time.
Well, I guess that's true. Yeah, I guess that's true. So... So what do you got for us, Dick?
Well, you know what? On the Gizwiz, we do a thing called Dick's Gadget Warehouse where I find really old stuff. And since you're into home theater, the home theater geek, I found my old, and tell me if you owned one of these, the Beam Scope.
Oh, is that the otherwise known as the Nova Beam? Is it a projector?
I only know that it's the Beam Scope or the Beam Scope 2. So okay. This is like a little more than 30 years ago.
Okay.
If you wanted a big screen TV, it had to be a projection TV.
Right.
Or you could buy a Beam Scope, which was a gigantic Fresno lens that you would put in front of your TV.
Oh, yes. I do remember that.
Yes, I had two of them. My first one was $100, and it turned my 17-inch TV into a 25-inch TV. Then a year later, they came out with Beam Scope 2 that turned my then real 25-inch TV into a 40-inch TV.
Man.
And Scott, this lens was so heavy, it came like on a big easel like you would see in school to roll out the blackboard.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead of that, I just ordered the lens, and I suspended it from the ceiling on pulleys.
Oh, my God.
So if I wanted to watch a movie, I would lower my Beam Scope in front of my TV set.
Oh, man.
Yes, but you had to sit dead center or two people close together because off to the side, you could see nothing.
Oh, the distortion must have been horrible.
Incredible. Incredible. And the big guy was $200.
Oh, man.
But I was into buying crap from forever.
Hey, Dick, I'm looking at an ad from a 1983 Popular Science with the beam scope. That's it. For as little as $59.95.
That was at the end of its life.
Actually, well, no, this is the Beam Scope 2.
That was probably if you had a 12-inch TV and wanted to make it into a 16-inch TV.
Oh, man. Even sitting right in front of that thing, though, I mean, the distortion must, I mean, you know, you must have had.
Well, actually, dead center was not too bad. But if you went a little bit off, yes, everybody was suddenly round. If you went a little further off, all you saw was color.
Color fringing. Yeah. Terrible. Wow. And you still have that in your gadget warehouse?
I still have it in the gadget warehouse. It's like almost too ridiculous to part with.
Well, I can certainly understand that. Now, I at first I thought you meant the Nova Beam, which was this.
What was the Nova Beam?
It was a projector. It had three CRT guns, a red, a green, and a blue, like most CRT projectors of the day. But it was packaged with this silver sort of semi-spherical screen. It was an actual curved screen, left to right and top to bottom. And again, you had to sit dead center to see it. It was like one of the very first projection TVs. And you had to line it up perfectly and converge it and everything. I mean, it was a pain in the butt. And
probably more than $200.
Yes. Seriously, more than $200. But that's what I thought you meant at first. But I do remember now these Fresnel lenses.
Yes.
You know, a friend of mine, Steve Wilson in Santa Cruz, California, just had this thought of, what about putting a little lens in front of an iPhone to increase its apparent screen size, you know, if you want to watch movies? Unfortunately, someone has already done it. Or at least
they've gotten a long time ago.
Yeah, but he didn't know that. So in any event, this idea is not new, clearly. Dickie D is telling us that it's 30 years old at least.
At least.
Oh, man. Well, you know, you're taking us down memory lane here. I know.
Well, if you come to New York City and you want to see something on my beam scope, just give me 2 days' notice.
Yeah, right.
And get a shopping cart. And
how much did that thing weigh?
You know, I'm going to say, I think it was 45 pounds.
Oh, man.
I know. It was a lot of lens.
It must have been plastic, right? Not glass.
You know, I think it was plastic.
Still, it's an awful lot of plastic.
And it had a big, you know, steel frame, and then it had a big thing to either go on the blackboard stand, and I used the stand to the hinges to make my pulley system up to the ceiling.
So wow!
You know, if they made
kind of bizarre.
If they made it out of transparent aluminum, it would have been a lot lighter.
Yeah. Where's Scotty when you need him?
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
at least I didn't buy two of them, put them side by side to try and do 3D.
Oh, man.
Leo would love that.
He would love that. Yeah, it's true. Wow. Well, Dick, thank you so much for taking us down memory lane and dusting off the beam scope.
Beam scope.
Coming up, are you doing a giz whiz?
I'm doing a giz fizz. Absolutely.
Excellent. We'll look forward.
After you're done with your great work here.
Well, thank you so much. We only got a couple minutes left here, so I want to say a couple things. One is to make sure to go visit techguylabs.com, which is the website associated with this radio show. James DeRuvo has been judiciously and studiously writing down everything we say, and the notes will all be up on the website very shortly, separated into individual segments. So you can even comment on anything, any of the particular calls that I've answered, and anything I've said, David said. Please chime in. We do love to see those comments on techguylabs.com. So with the minute or two, thank you, chat room. I do want to also plug my show, Home Theater Geeks, which records on Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific time, 5 to 6 Eastern time. This Monday, my guest is AVS Forum founder David Bott, who has some strong opinions about where the home theater industry is now and where it's going. That
should be a fun show.
Should be a very fun show. He's actually going to show us around his home theater, too.
He has a really nice home theater.
Really nice home theater.
Like drooling.
Yes.
Drool-inducing.
Drool-inducing nice home theater. And that's it. We're done. David Vaughn, thank you so much for being here.
It was fun.
My pleasure to have you here. It's Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek. Geek out.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.